TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
NFL is back.
All the time. A division of Bell Media.
If you want to know the real deal about the three, we're going to take you with triple chop. We're going to bring you up to speed. Yeah.
TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Afternoon, Manitoba, and for all those joining us live this afternoon on TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Hey, you now.
I wasn't your cue to talk yet.
You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. We have a busy 3 hours in store for you this afternoon, coming up in about 30 minutes' time. He's an instructor at the University of Manitoba in the Asper School of Business. Sean McDonald is going to join us in studio, spend some time. He's an expert on collective bargaining and on labor negotiations. So we're going to be joined by Sean. He's going to come in studio, chat about the ongoing negotiations between the NHL and the NHLPA.
Seem to be going well.
Oh, yeah. Definitely going well. Productive week in terms of getting things done.
Yeah, met a lot. Had good meetings.
Yeah, we'll get into that coming up in a couple of minutes. After Sean, coming up at 1 o'clock from USA Today, has been a frequent guest on this program.
Yep.
Kevin Allen is going to be joining us. He's the national hockey writer for USA Today, one of the foremost authorities on the sport in the United States, really in Canada, too, for that matter. He's that well-regarded. So he's going to join us coming up at 1 o'clock. And then at 1:30 from the National Post, Michael Trakos is going to join us. Michael's been on a few times. He generally is a columnist for the National Post, also covers a lot about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Wrote a really good column about Chris Barch and the Twitter rant that Mr. Barch went on earlier this week. So we'll be joined by Michael to talk about that column, really everything else, CBA related things in regards to the Toronto Maple Leafs to some regard. Should be an interesting interview. Like I said, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. Richard, Ezra, good afternoon, gentlemen. You're both looking well.
Good afternoon. You're looking well, too. I'm ready to talk hockey, and, I promise, no matter what happens today, I won't throw debris at you.
You won't throw what at me?
Debris.
From the
it's
game,
a reference
the
to the
game
Braves
yesterday?
Game yesterday.
Oh, debris.
How could you not pick up on that?
Yeah, it's,
come on.
It's
did
debris,
you
not debris.
Yeah,
and also, you slept through that game, Ezzy.
Yeah, first of all, it's there's no S in it. It's debris.
Unless it's Febreze.
It's debris.
It's not debris. It's spelled debris, but it's debris.
Oh, I'm thinking of Febreze. Sorry. It's
or yeah, brie
yeah,
the cheese.
It's, so it's debris plural. You don't pronounce the S. Okay.
Yeah, when you throw multiple things at me, it's not throwing debris at me. It's still throwing debris at me.
I'm pretty sure you pronounce the S.
No, you definitely
it's like,
don't.
It's like a silent S. It's not really silent, but it kind of is.
It is, but it isn't.
It's subtle. It is, but it isn't. But regardless, there was a little bit of a controversy.
As long as you didn't say irregardless there, as you were
just
good.
Just stop talking for a second. Richie, how are you?
I'm enlightened.
We have to laugh because the NHL is so depressing.
Well, I thought you were going to say if you want to be friends with me, you have to laugh.
We talked about Kevin Allen being on the show and going through navigating our way through. You noticed this as well, Drew. Navigating our way through the USA Today website. They just got a new website, and there's a toolbar for sports. And across the toolbar are all the sports:
NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, college football,
high school.
Yeah. I think NASCAR's up there. I'm pretty sure Equestrian's up there.
And then there's a tab.
Yeah.
Equestrian.
And you press,
The more sports tab is where you find the NHL.
That's where you find the NHL. That's how relevant it is right now in the States. And if you sit out a year, you will be at the bottom of the tab that you press.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can understate how important that is. The Canadian fans will, and we'll talk about this later in terms of fan effect and how they can affect this lockout and the after effects of it. But in the United States, you're not exactly relevant, and you will become irrelevant.
At the best of times, you're not that relevant.
That's right.
And then you've just done nothing but, you came off, you had the high of the Kings winning the Cup, getting a lot of attention in a big market.
And let's talk about that, for example, okay? So you have the Kings coming off a Cup. They'd be opening the season, this weekend and then this week?
Thursday night, I think, was when the season was supposed to start, October 9th.
So Tuesday,
the Jets were supposed to play The Jets were
the Jets opener was on October 13th.
Sorry, the 11th is Thursday.
So the 11th. So let's get this straight. The Kings would be opening up, or I don't know their exact schedule. They'd have their opening up, and there'd be a Stanley Cup party, and they'd raise the banner, and they'd do all that stuff. But instead, the NHL as a whole has decided to shut things down. And now you have people in LA talking about what? The Dodgers offseason, now that the Dodgers are out. The fact that they may be building a new NFL stadium there.
Well, it sounds like they are.
And most importantly, Dwight Howard's back and Steve Nash and how they're going to fit into the Lakers system.
It's Kobe's team, though.
Well, yeah, exactly. But the point is,
Nobody cares.
And nobody's talking about it. And so you had the chance to capitalize on it. I've spoken to people who live in LA who had season tickets to the team. They captured the imagination of the fan base there and of the city as a whole.
Whatever you think of him, Bill Simmons is probably one of the most well-recognized sporting figures nowadays.
Yeah, for sure. Grantland.
You know, Grantland.com, ESPN.com. You know, for sports fans, you know, at least in and around our generation, Bill Simmons, you know, his name carries weight.
Sure.
And he was a Los Angeles Kings season ticket holder.
Yep.
And he spoke about the Los Angeles Kings way more than he ever speaks about hockey at whatsoever. Yep. And now you've lost all that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, why did he do it? Because his daughter liked the games. Well, you know, she'll find something else to keep her interest.
And maybe that'll keep her interest for good.
And then maybe she doesn't care about the Los Angeles Kings anymore, and Bill Simmons doesn't care about the Los Angeles Kings anymore, and boom, you're no longer even relevant on ESPN.com, where you're not even really relevant on ESPN to begin with.
That's right.
And what's unfortunate is not only has Los Angeles lost that momentum, I mean, that was their first Stanley Cup in 40 years. I mean, that's extremely significant. Obviously, Gretzky put arguably hockey on the map when he went to L.A., and that was huge, and that, after Gretzky left, it went down significantly, and the Kings really struggled there for a while. So not only have they lost their momentum, but you're talking about the Bostons, the New Yorks, the Chicagos, all those other teams.
And as you mentioned, those particular cities, you know, Boston wins the Cup, Chicago wins the Cup, Detroit has won a Cup recently, Pittsburgh has Crosby and Malkin. We've talked about it on the show before. I've written about it before. Philadelphia is looking pretty good. The Rangers made the conference final. All of the successful big markets that you want to succeed at the best of times are all succeeding right now. They're all making a lot of money, and they're succeeding. And once again, we realize that this negotiation is more or less, well, sure, some of them want more money, but more or less for the organizations that have been put in places that can't work, haven't worked, aren't working right now, whatever it may be.
The NBA, David Stern, you know, commissioner of the NBA, pretty, you know, he never actually come out and said it, but it's pretty clear what his mission is. His mission is to make sure the best basketball is being played in the biggest cities.
Yes.
You know, he doesn't care about the Milwaukees.
Right.
He doesn't care about the Clevelands. He doesn't care about the, you know, the really small, not small towns, but the smaller markets. You know, the San Antonio Spurs are probably the exception there because they've been so good for so long with, you know, David Robinson and Tim Duncan. He doesn't care about the Sacramento Kings. He cares about the Miami Heat, the Los Angeles Lakers. He cares about the Boston Celtics, the Bulls, the Knicks, the Brooklyn Nets now to some extent. Though that's what is his bread and butter. Those are the only teams he really cares about, whereas Gary Bettman seems to only care about the small market teams.
But Gary Bettman put the teams in the small market, in the southern markets, and that's why when people talk and they say, you know, Gary Bettman is just doing a job. Well, you can't tell me Gary Bettman is just doing a job and ego's not involved. I think that's a bunch of garbage, frankly. I think that you have him in Phoenix. You have these teams in Tampa. Are they making it work? What about Carolina? I mean, some of these cities are making it work. Nashville, Columbus. Some of these cities, management has put the team down the drain. Like Columbus could have been successful if they ever had a successful team. But who knows if they'll ever make money or ever be successful. Phoenix is the biggest joke in sports right now. And at the end of the day, I mean, what it seems to be is that Gary Bettman is going to the players and asking the players to make up for some of the problems that he's created when there are viable markets elsewhere. Whether you think it's Seattle, we certainly know Toronto. If he would ever do that, Quebec City is something that wouldn't really take away too much from Montreal, and they're available. Mm-hmm. So there are cities, Hamilton. Obviously, that's a Toronto factor there, but there are some cities, especially in Canadian cities, that are available to him to get rid of a problem, thereby eliminating some of the issues in the CBA, adding more money to the pie.
Well, let me interrupt.
More
you
money
right there.
To a 51% of more money.
Well, let me interrupt you right there. If Gary Bettman, right now it's, you know, we know 57% for the players, 43% for the owners. If Gary Bettman said to the players, we'll bring your share down to 50-50, but we're going to move all six of these teams in the U.S. that don't make a penny in revenue, and we're going to move them into markets that are going to generate a ton of revenue, $100 million in revenue like the Jets did, Why wouldn't the players? Players might agree to 50-50 at that point in time.
Maybe.
I think they should. You know, they would
they
be right
that,
to
then why are two teams?
If they, yeah, I mean, whatever number it is, they. I mean, that's why the players were so in favor of the Jets coming into sure. the league, because they knew that it was going to make more money for their pocketbook.
That's the problem with that, Drew, is I don't know if there are six markets where you could move teams.
Whatever number it is, any additional revenue is additional revenue, right? But you know, when you have a team that goes when you have $100 million. In revenue, where you had $0 in revenue or $10 million in revenue, whatever number you know the Florida Panthers are bringing in, the players are on board with that. And they might be on board with that, you know, at 50% or 51%.
Absolutely, and it probably wouldn't be. And the concern for the players all along is not that they won't agree to 50, but they won't agree to an immediate 50 because then the salaries will be cut.
They don't want the rollback.
But what happens if you go to some of these cities and you adjust it for that year or two, and then they come into the league, and the truth of the matter is once you get to 50, it'll probably be the same amount of money or something close to that, approximately. You know, again, that's why when people say there's, you know, he's only acting for the owner's best interest, well, I don't necessarily think that's the case.
No, he's obviously, there's his own, Gary Bettman within that, I mean, that power structure or however you want to call it. I mean, it's undeniable, Richie, like you mentioned, you wrote about this. I mean, the owners that drive the owner's bus, you've got the Jeremy Jacobs and the insiders. It's true. I mean, it is an old boys club where you do have certain teams are more powerful. The richer teams are more powerful than New York's and all those teams, Toronto's and Montreal's.
Hey, by the way, LA's for sale right now.
Yeah, because AEG is for sale, which is the big conglomerate, for lack of a better word, that owns pretty much all of downtown Los Angeles by the sounds of it. You know, they own the Kings, they own they don't own the Staples Center.
Right.
But they own LA Live, which is that complex down there, and I mean, that's going to be a $1 billion real estate transaction when it eventually happens. But, I mean, it's just I'd laugh when Bill Daly comes out and as if we're supposed to be sympathetic. And earlier this week, lost $100 million. That's how much this work stoppage has cost
us. That's not net. That's gross revenue. After the expenses, I mean, who knows how much it is.
I mean, that's basic financial accounting.
He's just pulling a number out of the air.
Oh, I feel terrible for the league to have lost $100 million.
You know, Drew, I want to say something on the topic of you know, the comments that were made by both sides. If you're a hockey fan out there and people that listen to the show, it's all hockey fans.
Well, and fans of you.
And yeah, right. But
lessons.
You're actually better served to just not listen to any of
that's
it
what's
because
happening.
It's actually all just. I mean, let's be honest.
Aside, of course, from listening to our show.
Right. Well, the NHL. Hold on a second. The NHL and the NHLPA. There's like a long term. If you think for a second, they don't know exactly what the timelines are and everything, right?
Sure.
They know, basically what we're looking at right now is half of a season lost or a full season lost.
That's right.
I think you guys would agree with that.
I agree with that.
Because we're not getting a 60, 70-game season at this point. We'll be lucky to be playing in December at this point.
The leverage for the NHL is, there's no leverage involved with the NHL in saying, you know, in continuing to move that deadline and say, well, we can start the season in the middle of February. You'd say to the players, you know, November, December 15th is your drop dead date. Either you're playing by then or the whole season's canceled.
Drew, they're going to talk this week and nothing will happen.
By the way, I love it. You know, they had a secret meeting. Oh, a secret, okay. And they leak it to the media right after, so it's such a real big secret. For an hour, 2 hours, and they're going to have a phone conversation this week. Don't kill yourself, guys. Don't kill yourself here having too many negotiations. It's the idea that they can't sit in a room right now and sit in that room and figure out a way until it's done. We've talked about this on the show many weeks in a row now. It's a disgrace, and they don't actually care. And any attempts they make to try and get the fans on their side should not be taken at face value because they're both to blame in this situation, and the fans they're pandering to the fans. The fans should not buy it because it's all a joke. And it's all pre-scripted junk that they've had put together in the summer to make sure they unveil it at certain times, and pinpoint certain dates to make sure that they can get their message out there. And anything other than that, Roy McGregor wrote about it yesterday, and this morning in the Globe and Mail. So any comments they make, you know, all the writers who are sitting there and every word, they're jotting down every word, they're meaningless. It's junk. It's PR garbage, and for us to take it any more seriously than that, to me, is a complete joke.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and a new article, courtesy of Ezra Ginsberg, is www.illegalcurve.com. We'll talk about that article a little bit later in the program. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, the 7:45 show is already sold out. 10:30 is still some tickets available. Dan Cummins at Rumors, tonight's his last night, actually. So you go check out Dan at Rumors. Give him a call, 488-4520. You can also buy tickets online at RumorsComedyClub.com. Next week at Rumors, Kelly Taylor. And just announced, coming up in 2013, something very excited. Both Tom Green and Rob Schneider coming back to Rumors Restaurant.
How many people yell that to him while he's doing his act?
I would imagine it'll be a lot. You can find out. Go see his act at Rumors coming up in 2013. Those two comedians just announced. So that'll be a big year coming up at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Gentlemen, you know, we continue with the CBA discussion. You know, they claim they've lost $100 million. Nobody really believes it. They've canceled the first 2 weeks of the schedule. How long do you think they let this drag out for before they finally just pull the whole plug? If they do pull a whole plug.
Well, I mean, we can kind of get an idea. They canceled the games for about 3 weeks in advance, right? So they canceled the games for October 24th, about October...
October 4th. 4th.
So there you go. So, I mean, if we're going to look at last time, the last... Locko and they played half the season. We said last week they played on January 20th, so the drop dead date would essentially be, you can't really go any later than that. Even though they tried to save the season in February of 2004 and 5 with Lemieux and Gretzky, I'd have to say that New Year's Eve would be the absolute drop dead date.
And Richie, what we're looking at, and it's funny, we're talking about these timelines. You know, if they're going to decide to cancel, like you said, the whole season, that's not going to happen until January or...
Well, they'll put it off as long as possible.
They're going to put it off.
Gary Bettman, if he actually was able to lock out two full seasons of the last nine, that'd be crazy.
Right now, though,
that's a hell of a tombstone engraving.
The owners, I mean, I guess they only really care about money, don't care about the game if that's the case, because if they let another one go, then they have to change leadership.
Elliot Friedman, you know, CBC, wrote this week that, you know, a guy, you know, the Rangers owner, James Dolan, is furious that this is occurring, this lockout is occurring. Mm-hmm. You know, at what point in time do these guys, like, how long do they stand in line for while Gary does everything in his power to save the smaller guys? It sounds like, you know, Jeremy Jacobs in Boston is the hardliner of all the hardliners. But it sounds like, you know, Ed Snyder, who's got his interests with NBC and the NBC Sports Network.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, has no programming. You know, James Dolan, which has Madison Square Garden TV. All these, you know, the Bell Media and the Rogers with TSN, with the Leafs and everything else and all the programming that they require on. How long do they stand in line while Gary Bettman caters to the Florida Panthers and the Carolina Hurricanes and the, you know, the Nashvilles and the, you know, the small fish?
Without, of course, really demonstrating any form of willingness to increase revenue sharing significantly. And isn't that the big problem?
Well, I mean, you know, that's the...
And that's one thing that Don O'Fear, you know, and through the negotiations we read articles about, that makes sense. You know, are you asking for the brunt of the losses for the weak teams to be fronted by the players, essentially?
Well, you know, Don O'Fear, I think, would say, you know, if you... He said, you know, we'll go down to 50-50, because everybody knows it's going to end up there eventually. We'll go down to 50-50.
And that's what Kevin Allen wrote about.
And that's exactly what Kevin Allen wrote about, and we'll talk to Kevin coming up in about 35 minutes' time. We'll go down to 50-50, but the money you save from us going down to 50-50 has to be incorporated into a robust and legitimate revenue-sharing program.
Right, and we know that the first few weeks here, or whatever it is, the first 2-3 weeks, there's these escrow payments, which is That's a percentage right. of their salaries. That they've planned for this. There's obviously money, and there's also some NHLPA
Yeah,
money
there's rainy day fund.
Apparently I read somewhere this week that apparently they're getting about $10,000 to $20,000 a month from the PA.
Okay, so there you go. So now it becomes, the owners...
That's enough for Chris Barsh to buy a lot of OVs.
Right, and the owners know that the players are set up for this. So now the way they look at it, they have to win something here. They know that they have to go a little bit further. And that's why everybody knows that the lockout isn't going to end in the next 2 weeks. It's we're going to see a minimum of 2 months here. So this whole process of negotiation, and sure, we don't know for that the lockout is going to end.
They're not negotiating.
Well, I thought it'd be done by, you know, they'd be back by Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving. I thought they'd be back that early, and I right now obviously don't feel that positive about that because I'd have to get this all wrapped up within a month, and I think that when I was making that my, you know, that was my prediction, I was thinking, to be honest, with logic, that logic would prevail on both sides.
Well, that's kind of what happened in the NBA, Richie. But David Stern hit on it. They didn't negotiate in those right now, specifically right now, and they've already canceled those 3 weeks. But right now, instead of having this nonsense where they say, oh, we're going to talk about talking, we're going to meet about having a meeting. No, this should be your urgency now. And there is no urgency right now. Mm-hmm. They keep talking about, okay, we're gonna set up this meeting next week. They should be in a room 12 hours a day negotiating. Right. And then maybe you could meet Richie's deadline of early Thanksgiving. But no, they're playing this game. They're playing this huge game, and they're toying with everybody. And everybody knows that their real deadline to have the season back is December.
And they don't care. I mean, we talked about this before, about the guys who are getting laid off and the jobs and the businesses they're affecting, all that stuff. They don't care. And so then you have a bunch of selfishness on both ends. And it's unfortunate. And to be honest, I mean, if Gary Bettman loses another season, I don't think he should be commissioner of the National Hockey League anymore. I feel strongly about that.
You know, until there's a coup amongst the owners. Since 2004, how many times has the NHLPA switched heads?
Five times.
You know, they had Goodenough, and then they canned him, and then there was Saskin, and then there was Paul Kelly.
No, there's 2 weeks there when what's his name from the card union was acting head.
Oh, Buzz Hargrove.
Buzz Hargrove, and then you had Kelly.
Yeah,
and then Kelly was out. And fair, that's five.
They went through their coup, I mean, for lack of a better word, and there was a coup even when Bob Goodenough was still negotiating in 2004. You know,
By the way, interesting to know that Bob Goodenough actually, they were negotiating, and Bob Goodenough put on the table a $46.7 million hard cap at that time, not tied to revenues.
And the player and the owners rejected.
The owners said no. So let's not say the owners are so.
The stupidest thing the owners ever did. By far the stupidest thing they ever did, because you can't predict the future very well,
that's right,
is that they tied the salary cap to revenue. And once they tied the salary cap to revenue once, they tied it to revenue in perpetuity, unless you're not...
Or
you're not going to tie it to... Well, no, you just create a hard cap. You create a hard cap that...
But none of the leagues who have caps have not tied to revenue.
Well, that was the mistake that the NHL owners made.
Well, especially because it was offered by the players.
Yeah, that was the mistake the owners made. I mean, you want cost certainty.
Gary Bettman was so bright and such a genius at this and so good at what he does, and why didn't he accept that?
$46 million hard cap not tied to revenue? How good would that cap look? I'll tell you what. Right now, the owners wouldn't be locking out the players. The players would be on strike if they had accepted that deal 8 years ago.
Well, you're touching on something, though, that is very relevant this time with Bob Goodenough. Bob Goodenough was right, and I don't think he gets enough credit. And everybody looks at it and says, well, they lost a season, and the owners actually won because they got cost certainty. But look at what happened with free agency. You look at free agency, that was huge.
That's right.
The free agency, they got the younger age of free agency.
It used to be 31, now it's 26.
It's 26.
Play,
yeah. That was the huge thing that they got. And well, why is that important? Well, look at all these guys that became unrestricted free agents, the Zach Parises, the Ryan Suters, guys. They signed these big deals. So, okay, did the NHL really win? First off, of course they didn't win, because 7 years later, we have another lockout. So everybody loses in that sense. But in the sense of negotiations in the CBA, we're back in the same problem. What's happened? Revenues have gone up from 2.1 to 3.3. Salaries have gone up in relation to that. And so we're in the same position. The owners are saying, well, you know what? Revenues have gone up too much. You guys are getting too big of a percentage. Well, why is that? It's because the CBA that you negotiated didn't really address that problem.
And going back to my comment about, you know, if you don't tie your salary cap to revenue... You tie it, you create a hard cap and you tie it to, you know, the yearly rate of inflation,
right?
Something like that. If the revenues have gone up to, like you said, the 3.3 billion or whatever we're at right now, and the owners, you know, the players keep getting their salary cap rising each year based on inflation, well, what sort of cap are they at now? They're at a much more reasonable number. The owners are really raking it in hand over fist. And instead, we're not in this situation because the owners think that they have the world. The owners would have a great CBA at that point.
And Dave Schultz wrote an article in the Globe this week about the luxury tax possibility. I wrote that.
Yeah, a soft cap.
I wrote that overtime.
Like they have in the NBA.
I wrote that overtime a few months ago. Maybe Remus can tweet that one out. And the whole point was, you know, you can get to the revenue sharing issue, by just having a luxury tax, and the luxury tax money goes into the revenue sharing pool.
Right.
And you tax it hard, you know, a dollar for dollar, so meaning a dollar spent over and above the salary cap is a dollar paid into the luxury tax pool, which is a dollar shared into the revenue sharing of the teams that qualify, never mind the fact that they likely have to redefine who and which markets qualify for revenue sharing. That's another option, but as Don O'Fear says, the owners aren't even willing to consider that. So again, you know, you're at the table here.
I don't know why they're not.
Well, because they, you know, it's Klopp. They want to keep it as hard line as possible. They don't want to even go above beyond the cap, even though the NBA has a luxury tax, and that's
baseball has a luxury tax.
Copies, yeah. Now the NFL doesn't,
right.
But the NFL is not comparable. See, the NHL can't compare itself to the NFL just because of the massive TV money.
No sports can
you
compare
saw the TV
itself.
Money that baseball signed for with TBS and Fox.
And if you ask most people, they'd say that they don't really watch baseball.
Why does the NHL,
I mean, baseball is nowhere near the popularity that NFL has or anything along those lines.
The NHL has this obsession with comparing itself to other leagues. When does any other league have a team that's been owned by the league for 3 years?
They're the small dog nipping at somebody's heels because they want attention.
And when they get attention,
they screw it up.
Yeah, that's right.
Then they screw it up. They get attention, and the dog runs away and does something stupid.
It's unbelievable. Back to what we were talking about in the first segment. It's unbelievable with the Kings winning the Stanley Cup, how many people that were made fans.
And
it's unbelievable and how they've completely flushed it down the toilet.
We'll leave it on this note. And who said, I would guarantee you the exact same thing was said in 94 when the Rangers won.
Not to mention the fact the Jets are back, and all the fans in Winnipeg have to go through this nonsense.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by U of M instructor Sean McDonald. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Minutes until the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Paul and Ezra Ginsberg. And we're pleased to welcome a guest in studio. Very rare that we have a guest that actually comes live in studio who wants to spend time with us face-to-face.
Well, I was in the neighborhood.
So we appreciate it. Sean McDonald, he's an instructor at the University of Manitoba. He's at the Asper School of Business. Labor relations and collective bargaining is your expertise.
That's what it says.
That's what it says. So we thought we'd have Sean on to, obviously we've been talking a little bit about labor relations and collective bargaining on this program over the last, unfortunately, number of months. That's probably the number one topic sports fans don't want to talk about.
Yeah, fair enough.
But, you know, Sean, because you're an expert on this subject, you know, we thought we'd go a little bit deeper into some of the, you know, topics that are, you know, sort of underlining this entire negotiation, some of the, you know, concepts, really, you know, if you want to get a little more academia on people. The first one, and a lot of people have been talking about lately, is the concept of mediation.
Mm-hmm.
We see that these two sides aren't negotiating, really. They have conversations about having conversations.
Yeah.
And it's been discussed in the last week or so, you know, why isn't mediation really on the table for both of these sides?
Well, it's not yet, because neither side has made a request for it. The job of a mediator is essentially, number one, to be a sort of measured and reasonable voice to sort of cool things down and to provide some sort of diplomatic communication between the parties, first of all. And then second of all, because of the fact that there's clearly some heat between the two sides, the mediator is also at times not just cooling things down, but trying to work out proposed solutions between the two sides. So in this case, neither side is asked. And I think we may see that at some point, that they ask for a mediator to do one thing. First of all, to, as I say, tone it down in the negotiations by having a third party. And second of all, to look at trying to take bits and pieces from either side's positions and sort of mesh out a possible solution that both parties could live with. And I would argue that we're at a stage right now where this may not be a bad idea.
Gary Bettman in the Globe and Mail this morning was quoted. He was asked about mediators by Roy McGregor, and this was his answer. Typically, mediators are used when one side or another is looking to change the expectations of their constituent. I believe that both sides fully understand each other, fully understand the nature of the issues. If I thought a mediator would be helpful, I would, of course, agree to it, but nobody is suggesting it at this point. Now, Don O'Fear was asked the same question by Jeff Blair, and his answer was, If it would be thought to be helpful, as he said, you do have professional negotiators on both sides, but we'd consider it. There hasn't been a tremendous record of mediators being able to lend a lot, but that doesn't mean in a given situation that would not be the case. Why do you think those two personalities seem so reticent to submit to a mediation, at least at this point?
Well, because they've won on their own in the past, and that's going to be sort of what their track record is based on. Gary Bettman won the last negotiation, or at least he thought he did at the time when he did two things. He got a kill shot on Bob Goodenough and got him out. And second of all, he got the salary cap. He could have got more. He didn't. Don Fehr is one of the, has a history of massive success. They don't have a salary cap in baseball. And he's created the strongest sports union around. So the fact of the matter is, they've won without mediation. They've won on their own. So that would be their initial reluctance. I think it's something they may come around on, though.
So it's safe to say that right now, ego is a factor in why there aren't mediators on both sides, or there isn't a mediator trying to bring the two sides together.
Ego comes in with all of this, and the reason is very simple. These guys have a track record of success, and they don't want to lose, and they would be afraid that a mediator would put them in a position where they have less control.
One of the interesting concepts, really in sports, not specific to the NHL, is you have these different sized markets, and each owner really has their own interest in mind. Yet they often are working together to create sort of a system that might not be to, say, owner A's benefit, but rather it helps the collective. You know, in the NHL, you know, the issues that the big market teams have are very different than the ones from the small market teams. Yeah. Yet Gary Bettman seems to be catering to the small market teams and their issues. Do you think there's a quid pro quo, an unstated quid pro quo in effect between all these owners that's currently keeping them all together?
Oh, I think so. I think that, first of all, Gary Bettman brought in the majority of these owners. These are his folks.
Because nobody wanted to own an NHL team for longer than 5 years.
Well, and he's been around a long time.
Right, yeah.
Second of all, though, the quid pro quo would be this. The large markets have probably got some sort of assurance that we're not going to push you on revenue sharing. We're not going to make you give up all of that money that you're collecting. And in exchange for that, I, Gary Bettman, have the power to essentially go to the mattresses in this negotiation to ensure that we'll have the type of deal that the small market teams have. We all wonder, why is there not a second team in Southern Ontario? And I would have to believe that the type of deal behind the scenes is something to the effect of, you be quiet as we go real tough on this, you know, revenue sharing, that we're going to press hard. And in exchange, I'm not going to press you on this issue of revenue sharing, and I'm not going to press you about having to go and give up, you know, another market in Southern Ontario. So there's got to be a deal, or else you wouldn't have this.
How isn't that collusion?
Well, it's not collusion because, first of all, I'm not sure that it's you know, I'm speculating here.
Right.
And I'm not sure that they would own up to this, but you have to wonder. And second of all, it's not colluding to sort of subscribe forces against the other side. It's an internal agreement regarding how we're going to strategize in the collective agreement.
Sean, in the article that Ed Tate wrote on Tuesday, you mentioned that until
the article, you were quoted in that article, I might add.
Right. You mentioned that your theory is that unless the NHL brand is significantly affected, like, and the comparison was with the replacement referees, until that happens, there might not be, you know, any change in each side's position. Now, knowing that each side has a very firm position, do you believe that there is anything out there that can you know, affect that position, or do you think that basically we're looking at a date that's been agreed on and they're not going to move off that regardless?
Well, my view is that the NHL franchises would have to be substantially and permanently in the eyes of the owners devalued before they'll really feel the pressure. Having said that, there's just so little at stake here that you couldn't sort of cut a deal? This is not the massive sea change that we were looking at 7 years ago. There's a deal to be made here. They're talking the same languages. In collective bargaining, they talk about framing an issue. And in the framing of the issue, it basically, Don Fehr has drawn a red line that says $1.87 billion. We're not going to take a cent less. He's framed it that way, and he's even had the players using terms like cutback. Ezra, if I gave you, if I allowed you to double your salary, and then you
from $0,
yeah, well, and then I say, but I want 5% back of it. But you get to double your salary. But I want—is that a cutback? I mean, it depends on how you look at it. So they've framed it in terms of a cutback. The NHL has sort of locked in on reducing the amount of revenue split. This is a question of semantics in many cases. So while they're dug in, my view is that there's a deal to be made here. I'm not sure they're going to get to it.
Do you buy into the fact at all that the Winter Classic and the fact that HBO was planning on recording and, you know, starting that whole production in November, do you think that has any impact on it?
Not a bit. It's been factored in ages ago in terms of their calculation. So I really think it's neither here nor there. The players might have wanted to say that that's a pressure point. I think that's already been budgeted for.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Sean McDonald. He's an instructor in labor relations and collective bargaining at the Asper School of Business at the University of Manitoba. Sean, stay with us. We're going to go to break. We'll come back. We'll do another segment on this.
You bet.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Joining us in the studio for yet another segment, Sean McDonald, instructor in labor relations and collective bargaining at the University of Manitoba. If you missed any of that interview, the first segment we did with Sean, you can download it on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. It's also available on the TSN 1290 website. That's www.tsn1290.ca.
Sean, we talked before the break about, you know, owners and trying to keep them in line, because there's your owners that are making a lot of revenue and owners that are losing money, likely, at least we think.
Yeah.
How do you, from the players' perspective, there's also the players who are making a lot of money and the players who aren't. How does Donald Fehr unite that group?
Well, I think, first of all, Donald Fehr's done a terrific job, unlike his predecessors, of uniting the rank and file of the NHLPA. Having said that, it's not that everyone is equal in terms of a player. I got to believe that Sidney Crosby's opinion carries a little more influence than Chris Thorburn's opinion, for example. Mm-hmm. And as a result, he probably is catering much more to the high-end players. There's many things in this collective agreement that the owners are proposing, you know, reducing some of the arbitration rights and length of contract and ceiling on contract, that if in a revenue-sharing system would massively benefit the plugger type of players. So we don't have these, you know, Shea Weber abomination of a contract. Yet I would still say he has to pay attention to the higher profile members of his union. And as a result, he's going to make his position shifted more towards the stars and less towards the rank and file, because they carry more influence.
And we talk about Donald Fehr, and something you talked about in the article that Ed Tate wrote in the Free Press this week was the term deadline hunting.
Yeah.
And that's something Donald Fehr has been known for. Can you expand on that?
Deadline hunting, all that means is that the negotiating team basically does not get serious about any type of negotiation until they get very close to some sort of perceived deadline, at which case the pressure on the other side, as the theory goes, will force the other party to kind of give in or give in a lot more because they're afraid of the consequences of reaching that deadline. In this case, the NHLPA really didn't get serious about bargaining until July. And you had a sense that this was coming up when the NHLPA rejected the initial conference realignment and when they simply were not speaking until July. That's a classic deadline hunt strategy designed to sort of enact pressure on the other side. I'm not sure it's worked yet.
What about the concept of a chilling effect?
Okay, well, and this is, if the NHLPA was guilty of deadline hunting, the NHL was very guilty of what's the chilling effect. And the chilling effect means that we put an initial offer forward that is so over the top, almost ridiculous in what it's asking for, that the other side doesn't want to play ball.
Like the initial NHL offer to the NHLPA.
Exactly. So they didn't want to play ball with that, so they didn't even address it. And as a result, everything they've talked about since then hasn't really been on the same terminology or framework of revenue sharing. It's been about reducing revenue growth. So we're at a sort of a standstill where the NHLPA was chilled by this offer of the NHL, and it didn't help things at all.
It seems, reading some of the comments and the analysis, that the initial offer, the offer that had the chilling effect, has also served to sort of galvanize the players in an us versus them mentality. Yeah. Is it possible that that offer really, has backfired on the NHL in more ways than just, creating a chilling effect?
Maybe over the long haul it will not be the case, and maybe we will get the deal we're always going to get. However, in the short term, it's sort of solidified the resolve of the players, which is something, because that's not a strong point from them in the past. It's solidified them, and yes, it has backfired.
So if the players, sorry, Richard, if the players, come in, or the owners come in with their first offer, and it's in a more reasonable tone of voice, does that create sort of a better starting point for these negotiations to take place under?
Well, no doubt it would have been a better starting point. I'm not sure it will matter, because I think that the NHLPA probably has a very solid idea of what they're looking for. The big question we've had to this point in time is, what is the end game of the NHLPA? What do they really want out of that? And it's a bit difficult to know that. The NHL, we know it's 50-50 or pretty close to that. NHLPA has been a little more cagey on this one.
If it ends up being 50-50, Sean, we're close to that, and most people think that's going to be the resolution and have thought that for some time, and they reach an agreement just before the end of the year, and then they start playing in mid-January, and really everybody had thought, okay, that's what the deal is going to be. Who gets hurt most by settling it at a number that the mass public thought was always going to be the end result?
Well, the easy answer is that who gets hurt first is not the players or the owners, it's the people that are employed in hockey. But in that type of a deal, I think the damage is minimal, and the reason for it is that the expected revenue growth is quite substantial, so there's not going to be much of a give back, particularly when we're looking at future TV contracts. We've seen the models and other cable things that are going to grow the business. There might be a couple of franchise relocations eventually that will grow the business. Things are looking very positive for both of them. So I don't see that there's, what you try to do in collective bargaining is come up with win-win solutions. Mm-hmm. I think that there's something, given the very promising revenue projections, I think there's a deal to be made, which is why I hope they don't turn their back on mediation.
Sean, as you know, most hockey fans just want the lockout to end. They it doesn't really matter about revenue and distribution. For the most part, we just want to see hockey fans, and especially here in Winnipeg, we just got our team back last year. For the hockey fans that are listening, what maybe would you be able to give us a sign or maybe a reason to believe that this is going to be over sooner rather than later? And then maybe at the other side of the coin, a negative reason why this thing might actually last a year.
Okay, the reason it could be over soon is that there's a lot of reason to think that their revenues, their money, is going to really grow. The TV contract for Hockey Night in Canada comes up in 2014, and that's going to be a big jump in revenue. So as a result of that, I think both parties should wise up. The other thing is that right now, it can't be justified for the players to be losing so much money, especially for the the lower end players, and even for the owners. They need to be concerned about losing in maintaining their expenses. So there's good reason to think that there could be something soon. Reason that there isn't, it's Gary Bettman and Don Fear. And these guys are brave and they're tough and they have a history of victories. And when we get to that sort of level, there may be a lot of blood on the floor before we get past an agreement.
Want to get back to the mediation concept to begin with. We had somebody tweet us at Illegal Curve with a question. You know, when you're talking mediation, that's different than, say, binding arbitration.
Correct.
Mediation is, you know, somebody is sort of a neutral party, comes into the room, hears from column A, hears from column B, and tries to get them sort of onto the same page where they really haven't got there yet, because the NHL has been talking hockey-related revenue, you know, the split of the hockey-related revenue, whereas the NHLPA has been, in their initial proposal, was talking much more about, you know, luxury tax and revenue sharing, things of that nature.
Yeah.
So there is a significant difference between, say, mediator and binding arbitration.
Yeah. I cannot see either side submitting to binding arbitration. They're not going to give up that type of authority. So I think, you know, our best hope is that we bring in a mediator and he tries to sort of work out a deal. The one thing I will say in trying to, you know, teach people about how to make deals, the best thing is to have several issues in place and several options available to both sides so they can pick and choose more. What we're doing right now is we're focusing on just one thing, and that's the distribution of revenue. There's a lot of other things going on there. And, you know, I think a skilled mediator would try to find a way to put in a system. I think if we accept this $1.87 billion and then not a penny more in future growth, so we would move down to a more agreeable thing. And I'll just throw one thing in because it's not mentioned much in these discussions. The issue is pensions. And the reality is that for the rank and file, there is massive money in the future regarding pensions. And I think that Don Fear, would be doing his group a solid by pushing very, very hard on pensions, which is the gift that keeps on going. Get it, the goldest of gold plates, better than the House of Commons. If you could find a way to get the best pension plan, you might be willing to give up a few other percentage points in terms of revenue.
And that's been an issue for, if you listen to past players.
Well,
I think Mark Napier is the head of the Alumni Association, and that's been an issue. I think there's been some discord between current players and past players and how they've been taken care of. And if you can address that now, you can sure do yourself maybe. Would that apply immediately and have some form of sharing with players who had played in the league before? Would that
probably
be,
not.
Probably not.
What it would do, though, and this is the thing. You have young players that are rich at the moment, and they don't think 35 years down the road. And Don Fear, you know, he should know enough that he would be really getting a very strong deal if he could give up a bit on this end and get much, much more down the road for his players. I haven't heard the topic come up, though.
Sean, I don't know if you can. We only have a couple minutes left, so I don't know if you can answer this one or as best as you can. In the NBA and the NFL, when they were going through their labor woes earlier, you know, in this past year, we heard a lot about decertification of the union.
Yeah.
Haven't heard that mentioned at all with the NHL. Can you sort of expand on the concept of a union decertifying and why the NHL hasn't gone down that road?
Well, it would be the NHLPA.
That's what I meant.
That would decide to decertify. When the NFL did it, it was somewhat disingenuous decertifications because they still maintained bargaining rights throughout the process. The idea is, though, to somehow circumvent some of the existing labor legislation, and it's being used for sort of future litigation and to not have a certified union. Bottom line is, we're not at that point yet, and we've seen even that the attempts in court in Alberta and in Quebec have been tepid at best. So it's probably not something that would come up for a while yet.
Sean McDonald, he's an instructor in labor relations and collective bargaining at the University of Manitoba. You'll be hearing more and reading more of Sean's work, hopefully coming up in the relatively near future on illegalcurve.com. Sean, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
Had a lot of fun.
Terrific. Thanks, John. Let's go to break. When we come back, Kevin Allen of USA Today. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know him from USA Today, Kevin Allen. Kevin, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, and I'm really impressed doing a three-hour hockey show in the midst of a lockout. That's good work if you can get it, I suppose.
You know what? It's every week we sort of say, "Well, what are we going to talk about when we meet early in the week? What are we going to talk about?" There's been no news. They haven't negotiated. What are we going to talk about? And then come Saturday afternoon, we always we've been able so far to get the 3 hours of information, and of course, being able to interview you certainly helps in that matter.
Well, I can certainly relate because, you know, we've been kind of kicking around, okay, if this stands a couple or three more weeks or months, what are we going to do? I mean, I'm actually planning on doing a story next week on Corey Carlander, who's playing for in the East Coast Hockey League. He's 39 years old, never been higher than the American Hockey League. And I thought, you know, I'm going to go talk to him about, you know, playing for the love of the game. He obviously is not worried about anything going on in the NHL lockout. I'd like to see what motivates him.
Yeah, ask him about Chris Barch's comments. I suspect you might get a different answer.
Yeah, exactly.
Kevin, you know, in a recent article you published, we'll tweet it out on our Twitter page right now, at Illegal Curve, you said everybody knows at this point that the end result is going to be something very close to a 50-50 split of hockey-related revenue. You know, what's the holdup in the NHL and NHLPA acknowledging this as the reality?
Well, I think the devil is in the details. There's no doubt about that. And I think that's what the issue has been. I think personally, players, my belief is they will go down to 50%, but they don't want to go, right away. You know, they'll go as a march down to it. They want to be walked down to it. And I don't know whether that's, 56, 55, 54, or maybe even something more, dramatic, like, 53 and then 52 and then 50. I think if you look at all the issues, as I did in a column about 3 weeks ago, and just look at them the way an arbitrator would, I think when you come to the issue of how much revenue should each side get, I think you conclude that 50-50 seems reasonable. But saying all that, I don't think it is reasonable for them to get 57% last season, to negotiate contracts based on that figure, and then suddenly be told, okay, we're going to go down to 50 right away, so the contracts you negotiated, we're going to shave, 17 or 18% off that. So I think the fair way to do it would be a slow drop, and I think ultimately that's what we'll see.
Kevin, the Canadian markets are making a lot of money, but if you look at the U.S. markets, and some people like to determine how a league's doing by how the big markets in the States are doing. So you look at the Rangers conference final, you look at L.A. winning the Cup, Boston winning the Cup the year before, Chicago, Detroit. All the big markets seem to really be flourishing. Isn't this the worst possible time for something like this to happen and then affect the success and the progress made in those markets?
Couldn't agree more. In fact, for my Sunday piece, I'm writing about, the five groups that you can feel some sympathy for during this lockout, and, with fans obviously being number one. But, I have the L.A. Kings listed. This is a franchise that has been trying for almost 50 years to try to turn the corner and make some inroads in that Southern California marketplace, and they finally win a cup, and there's a lockout. They don't get to take advantage of it, and they got their first big push when Wayne Gretzky was traded there in 1988, and I think this is really their second push, and we're starting to get players out of Southern California. You're starting to see them pop up in the draft, and I think this Stanley Cup championship would have been another big push for it. But again, I think they will suffer because of this lockout. They won't get the full benefit of winning that cup. But I do agree with what you said. This really is almost like a golden era for at least south of the border, I guess even north of the border, because with the way the Canadian dollar is, it's just a lot easier for the smaller Canadian markets now to be successful as well.
Kevin, how big of an effect do you think the television contract between NBC and the NHL is going to have on getting this new CBA done?
I don't think a lot. I mean, I think all this gets talked about when you negotiate that big of a contract. I think, you know, NBC, this is not their first rodeo. They understand that collective bargaining is part of the process, and I'm sure they were prepared for this. But what I would say is I think the up-and-coming redo of the Canadian television contract, I think, is playing a role in this, because I think players are looking ahead and seeing, well, you know, there's going to be quite a financial bonanza when this next new Canadian television deal is finally achieved. And when that happens, I think they want to make sure they get their share of it. And, you know, just going back to this lockout as well, I mean, it hasn't helped the process that, you know, the NHL, under the guise of just, you know, bargaining, starting out low and trying to move up, you know, they really alienated the players with their first offer, even though it certainly was in keeping within the spirit of what they did also in the NBA and the NFL.
This might not be NBC's first collective bargaining rodeo, but that's the only thing they have to show right now on the NBC Sports Network. So I think they can.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's a fair comment. But I just think, you know, I don't see that they're going to try interfere in this. I mean, you know, if they lost a season, they may say, "Hey, Gare, what's going on?" But I think they were well aware of what they were getting into. You know, when you spend that kind of money, you understand what's going to happen. And I don't think. Even though it was a much bigger financial gain than people thought the league was going to get, it's still not enough money where they can come in and say, you know, get your act together. You know, they may say, hey, Gary, you know, can you help us out? Because, and really, it's been a good deal for the NHL. We pay a lot of attention to you on our NBC Sports Network, and without you, you know, we're struggling. And, you know, already the NHL has had a meeting with their sponsors because, you know, you don't think of this because you think of them as just, you know, paying money to the league. But, you know, they get advantages from being associated with the NHL. And if the NHL is not, that's why they pay their money. And if the NHL is not running, then, you know, they suffer as well.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Kevin Allen of USA Today. Kevin, really, the players have shown a pretty good sense of unity so far. The exception sort of happened this earlier this week when Bobby Ryan spoke out against his fellow NHLers heading overseas to Europe to play in the various European leagues in the short term. What's your opinion on the players that head overseas and play there?
Yeah, I think that's a tough call, and I admire Bobby Ryan for the stand. You know, as a guy who grew up in the state of Michigan, which is a bastion of unionism in the, you know, 1960s and 70s, I didn't cross the picket line until I was over 30 years old, and there were a lot of them, you know, in Michigan. You know, the UAW was strong, and, you know, one of the thought processes is that, you know, because you want to maintain your job and you don't want, you know, somebody coming in and taking your job, that you respect you know, even though there's not a picket line in this case, but you respect someone else's job as well. And, you know, the point that's often made is hey, you know, you're going over there and taking someone else's job. And, you know, I think that's a fair comment. On the other hand, I also thought that Sidney Crosby made a great argument on the day before the lockout when everybody was gathered in New York, and he said, hey, this is a competitive business. You know that when you get in. You know, you have to fight for your job every day at training camp, no matter where you go. And he just sees it as part and parcel of being a professional athlete, that you know that whoever can come in, whether it's off the street or from another league, can take your job.
Kevin, we hear a lot about markers, you know, as fans. There's a marker of maybe U.S. Thanksgiving, and then we hear about the Winter Classic, and we're not really sure if that's the drop-dead date or not. Do you think one of those dates is going to serve to unite these parties to get a deal done, or do you think it's just going to a deal is going to happen naturally if it happens?
Yeah, well, you know, it's the same markers we're hearing here in the U.S. You know, I've talked about them as well. I mean, they're important issues. You know, certainly, you know, I think it's important to establish the length of the season. I mean, I think one of the issues that will be lost is that this season will be completely different if we lose more than 20 games. And I say that because the National Hockey League, in my opinion, more than other sports, really is an endurance race. And that is you got to be not only perform at a high level, but you got to still be standing and healthy at the end of the season. And when you take and reduce the number of games, you just change the whole race. And, you know, I'll give you an example of that. Look how good Minnesota was early last season. But over the course of time, over 82 games, we saw what Minnesota was really about. Right. You know, they weren't very deep. You know, they weren't mentally tough enough to sustain injuries. And, you know, I think at the end, a team like a survival team like the Los Angeles Kings, because they were able to hang in there and endure the long schedule, they ended up winning the Stanley Cup. So I think it, you know, it dramatically changes what's going to happen this season if you shorten the schedule. I think maybe it helps the team that you know may not be deep, and it helps the team that you know may not be as tough. It may be more a skilled team has an advantage in that case. But saying all that, going back to your question, I think the league sort of feels like, you know, because of financial reasons and also just the idea of having a full season, I do believe that Thanksgiving marker is a legitimate one. I think they're looking at that, and I really believe that the Winter Classic, where they're going to, you know, break an attendance record and have somewhere between 114,000 and 119,000 in Ann Arbor, Michigan, is something they don't want to lose. This Winter Classic has become a major, major, major event in the United States. You know, it's a, columnists other than hockey people write about it. It gets a lot of play. The fact that they've carved a niche on New Year's Day, when it's usually about college football, it's a very important date, and they don't want to lose that. Now, saying all that, you know, there's been rumbling that, you know, some of the owners have said, hey, maybe we ought to make a statement here by just postponing it and going back there the next year. Maybe that'll send a message.
Kevin, from what we're told in Philadelphia, only 5 Philadelphia Flyers season ticket holders have canceled their commitments since the start of the lockout. Now, if the fans aren't going to hurt the owners in the pocketbook, what incentive do you believe there is for the owners to make a deal and get, you know, hockey back and going?
Well, they're still losing a lot of revenue. You know, clearly, I mean, we know from, because now we know the finances of the league, that players suffer more than owners because of the $3.3 billion that we had last year. Owners got 1.5 of it, and players got 1.8. You know, that $1.5 billion is coming in, and although, you know, some teams are losing money, and it's it may be better for them not to play, there are a lot of teams that are doing really well, particularly in the big market. So, you know, as they see those gate receipts not coming in, and I think they do feel the pressure. And I also think that the makeup of the league's ownership also plays a role in this. Let's just look at it in this way. You know, Mike Ilitch is 82 years old. I don't think he wants to lose the season. Mm-hmm. Ed Schneider is up there as well, pushing toward 80. I don't think he wants to miss the season. You know, Vinick in Tampa Bay, a new owner who understands certainly the finances of the game and wants to make money, but he's pretty excited about his team. I'm pretty confident LA doesn't want to miss the season as well. There are a lot of owners who are in this and they're committed and got their arms around each other in a show of unity, but after a while they're going to start to say, you know, we got to figure out a way to get this. So I think there'll be pressure on both sides of the aisle to get this done.
Kevin, we'll let you go on this last question. You just mentioned all these owners that don't want to lose a season, and these are, like, you know, the bigger markets, and we spoke about it earlier. You know, who is this lockout for then? Is it for these franchises that really may not ever be able to carry their own weight in the NHL?
I don't think it's for anybody. I think this is a standard of a management versus labor fight as you will ever see. You know, last time we were entrenched and dug in on a change of the system, the introduction of a salary cap versus maintaining a free market system, it was a matter of principle. This is about money. You know, it's always about money, but this is really about money, and this is no different than, you know, automobile workers and management fighting over the cost of labor. This is strictly about money, and players have said, hey, you know, we want to help the financially distressed team. We don't want Toronto and Phoenix to get the same amount of money. And Gary Bettman has said, well, you know, you let us decide how we're going to spread the money. But, you know, they're just trying to get more money. You know, this is a fight over $1 billion over the course of a 6-year deal. It's 231. If you take them down to 50% from 57, that's $231 million. If, and that's not even counting growth per year. So over 5 years, you're talking about $1 billion. So that's what they're fighting about. It really isn't, you know, any group of owners. It's just the owners saying, hey, we got a chance. We've got the hammer here. We've got leverage. There's in America, there's certainly a trend toward reducing your labor costs. Let's jump aboard this train.
Kevin Allen from USA Today, terrific insight as always. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Take care, Kevin. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is a bit of a quick comeback from the commercial there, boys. Got to give me a little bit more preparation there. Anyways, welcome back to the program. Big thank you to Kevin Allen of USA Today for having joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get a sent to your iPod each and every week.
Still sound good, Drew.
Pardon me?
Even if you were rushed back.
Thank you.
Sound great.
I'm just that much of a professional. Coming up in about 10 minutes' time from the National Post, Michael Tracos is going to join us. Before we bring on Michael, because he actually before we get to that, I might as well do this promotion. This segment of the program is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. Not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty. 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. In fact, later on this evening, we'll be, David Carr helped you buy your place.
He did.
And, Rich, Ezzy, you excited? Richie's housewarming party tonight.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first.
Yeah, you didn't get the in, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, Ezzy wasn't invited, sorry.
It was canceled.
Yeah.
Yeah, about that. Yeah.
It's okay, I'll go see Taken 2 then. No, I'm excited. It's going to be good times. I haven't left the house in a while.
Is that about the sandwich that you took from, like...
Yeah, Taken 2.
Yeah, exactly. It's about the pizza as you took from Carbone.
Yeah, exactly.
It's true.
You know, let's talk about Chris Bartsch. You know, he had his soliloquy on Twitter. Everybody's seen it. Remus can tweet out a link to it. It's too long for me to say on air. And also, I think he thought it was insightful. I don't really think it was. I think it was arrogant.
Well, I'm not sure if what he... there was obviously some adult beverages involved, and everybody knows that by now, but I'm not sure if he was writing it to necessarily be insightful, Drew. I think he was trying to get it off his chest. And I don't necessarily disagree with you that it was a little bit arrogant, but, I mean, we were talking about this off-air. I think Eric Dehatchik wrote probably the best article, and obviously Michael Tracos wrote about it too, and it was huge news. And I mean, this really showed social media is not ending this lockout, but social media has a huge...
Let me ask you.
So social media plays a huge role because that's where people go talk about it. And I just want to say something about the rant, because, you know, Chris Bartsch was talking about everybody's entitled to their opinion, and that's why I like Twitter so much, is because you can say whatever you want. Obviously, you know, you shouldn't swear and, you know, use bad language or anything, but you can say whatever you want, and there's always going to be somebody to listen to you. But I think the reason why people were maybe a little bit unhappy, let's call it that, about his comments were because he was kind of looking for sympathy, and by getting, you know, his thoughts off of his chest, it almost seemed like we should be sympathizing with the players. And don't get me wrong, okay? You know, I'm a huge hockey guy, and in fact, if you've listened to the show before, I like tough guys, and I'm supportive of fighting, and I stick up for the Grinders and those guys in hockey. But the fact is, like we've talked about pretty much for this whole show, is this is all about money, and this is all about the NHL asking the players to take a lesser share of the revenue. And even though Chris Bartsch has earned his right to be in the NHL, and he's earned it, it's tough when your average person in Canada and your average income in Canada, individual income is probably what, $40,000 or $50,000?
Sure.
To relate to the guy, to have sympathy for a guy who's making $1.5 million a year is very difficult. And for him to kind of use that as a reason why we should sympathize with him is it was a little bit. Nobody was really relating to it. And when you throw in the fact that there's all of these other players chiming in, and that's kind of, I would say, the negative side of Twitter.
Let me ask you this.
I think you just would have been better off tweeting, don't hate the player, hate the game.
Now, you know what? Let me ask you this.
That's good.
You know, and I'm sure he never thought this through.
Oh, you're kidding.
I know. Well, it's shocking.
Let's not forget 9 OVD, wasn't
he? I know. Well, and this is why, you know, don't drunk text, don't drunk tweet.
I'm pretty sure Hustler and I were 9 OV deep yesterday.
Yeah, well, that's a separate issue altogether. You know, explain to me, after this next contract is up, Chris Parch is going to be life or death probably in the best of times to get us another contract,
right,
based on his track record and the fact that somebody a lot cheaper can come in and do his job.
Yeah.
Why would any owner hire him right now? If he didn't
because
have...
Because if he has something the owners think they need to win, they'll still hire him. It's pretty simple.
But
they're out for themselves, which is fine, and they're going to do what they want to do to win. The Devils think they need to get tough. Last year, they couldn't play any of those guys in the fourth line because they were a disgrace. They played here on January 14th, I believe, in Winnipeg, and their fourth line was not worthy of NHL competition.
Oh, no, Chris Barch is just replacing Cam Jansen. They're throwing him $1 million. He's going to go out and play 6 minutes and fight. That's all he's going
to
do.
And the point is they couldn't even trust those guys to do it. And if you saw the lineup at Devil's Ice in the Stanley Cup final, it didn't have that fourth line anymore. They completely changed the fourth line
right at
the end of the season. If you have Steven Gionta, et cetera, et cetera. But if the Devils still think, and Lou Lamoriello's always felt, you know, there's some tough guy, whether he plays all the time or not, I need him in the lineup, then they'll sign him, Drew. I don't think these comments will really have a bearing on his next contract after the 2 years are up, or 1 year up if there's no season.
Richie, I'll tell you this much. When the players say, we don't want it, we took a haircut, we took a salary reduction last time, we don't want to do it again, I respect that a lot more than a guy saying, you know what, I've worked all my life and I deserve to make $1.5 million. Nobody deserves to make $1.5 million a year. How many people, the percentage of people that make $1.5 million a year is not very big.
Does he honestly think that he has anything in common with as he says in his Twitter rant, a truck driver, a farmer, or a line worker?
True, we're not talking about, you know,
an intellectual here?
The most intelligent individual here, and I think that if he would have, not only did he not think this through, he posted this while it seemed to be at least somewhat impaired, so his judgment was even further
impaired.
Impaired, yeah.
He probably should have been tweeting his blood alcohol limit every 5 minutes.
Yeah, that too.
0.2, 0.3.
I mean, this is why you have Twitter, and you have guys on Twitter who, they don't realize, it's amazing that they don't realize that posting something online is there and it's there for good and it's going to be run with and it's going to be a talking point, especially when there aren't too many talking points at this period of time, aside from the generic comments made by both the PA and the NHL about their negotiations. So he's foolish in that regard. The one thing I guess that he's benefited from is heightened exposure. I mean, you heard him on here, that TSN TV, you know, best of the week, and he was on Off the Record with Michael Landsberg. Well, He's raised
his own profile.
His own profile.
You know, long term. And I'm taking a long term view of this, even though obviously I think Chris Barch wasn't when he made his comments. Long term, you know, what is the benefit for having this speech?
There is no benefit. The fact is, okay, you know what? If Chris Barch was,
if everything in life is either net benefit or net, you know, hindrance. You know, this just...
Leave that to Sean McDonald.
But it just seems like there's no, like, you know, I would, you know, maybe he gets another contract after
this. You remember, he's also the guy who was...
I know,
ejected from the Panthers Canadiens game after being accused of a racist slur against PK Subban. So, man, you know.
Right. I'm maybe giving him too much credit to think that he actually thought this through.
Well, Drew, to answer your question, I don't think we're going to be talking about this 2 weeks. I think we're going to forget about this 2 weeks from now. It's one of those things that we're talking about it now. What else is there to talk about?
He doesn't care if we're talking about it or not. He cares about if next contract, when this contract's up with the Devils.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Drew, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If the comment, whether or not it happened this past year to PK Subban with racial undertones, if that happened, if he got a contract after that, do you not think he'll get a contract after these comments?
I agree with Richie, and I don't think this has anything to do with that.
I think in the warped mind of the world, the NHL sometimes, or world of professional sports sometimes operates in, where you always get a second chance, I think you're more likely to get a second chance, you know, for committing a crime or for, you know, saying something that's racially insensitive than you are for blasting the guys who eventually have to write you a check. Let's go to break.
Thanks for writing me those checks, by the way.
Yeah. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.